Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tell Some Cypriot Laundry. Now, I am joined today by the lovely Joanna Drysdale. She has been a previous guest, but there just wasn't enough time for me to get nerdy and talk about insurance. So I had to get you back on. So are you happy to be back on and talk about nerdy things?
I actually can't believe you want to hear it all, Cherise. I'm absolutely dorking out right now.
I'm a weirdo. I am a weirdo, but it's weirdo with a purpose. Okay, so obviously when we finished up our last conversation, I said it's the knowledge, the understanding of really what the insurance covers for crew members. I'm putting it in a very simplistic form. Now, I'm not slagging off crew. You're all amazing if you're a crew member that's listening to this podcast right now. But I wish that I'd understood more on board. And now understanding a bit more, it could lead, if more of us understood how it functions, it could lead to exciting changes which will help women across the board from now on to the future. So hence why I wanted a whole episode to get nerdy. So thank you for coming on.
Our pleasure.
So you work for MHG, a big boat insurer. And one of the things that I think is hazy and is a misconception in the industry of I can guarantee if I asked 20 crew members what they're covered for, they wouldn't have a clue. They just wouldn't. Yeah. They're too busy living their best life. They're not injured yet. They don't need to know. They may have glossed over it during signing a contract. Rough idea. You know, I'm not sure that all captains go into that much detail. You've got cover. It covers XYZ. But let's before we get into like the nuts and bolts of it, obviously one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you again is because you've got a wealth of experience. You've been doing this for quite some time now. So when you started working with the crew, we call it welfare insurance. Welfare,
sure,
yeah. What was being offered and what did it cover? But pretend that I am a 19-year-old Stew with really tight skin, but you know, has not ever really thought about insurance before.
I want to say, I don't blame the crew for not being aware of their insurance. They're busy. They're busy working really long hours, and when they're not busy working, they're off gallivanting doing their thing. So I wish I was in their position instead of mine. I think so. When I started in crew insurance in 2011, it was pre MLC had been put together, but it hadn't been ratified yet. So there was much less focus on, for us, is it MHG focuses on crew benefits. So we're not so much only covering the losses of the owner, but the owner is often looking to us to provide something to attract and retain crew. So the cover that we're providing is, generally speaking, more comprehensive. But even back then, the focus was more on medical expenses and less on what you might have to contractually provide. Then when MLC became ratified in 2013, all of a sudden people became much more interested in sick pay, permanent disablement, death cover, repatriation, all of these things that MLC requires ship owners to actually insure. MLC doesn't require you to insure sick pay. I should just take that bit back.
Nice. You don't have to, you know. So before 2013, what kind of cover did crew have? Anything, really?
Yeah, well, our business has grown a lot since then. So there's obviously the superyacht sector is growing enormously. So that's got something to do with it, but also the interest in what we provide has grown as well. So I think that's partly because there's competition, a lot more competition now. But before MLC, your very, very generous owners were providing a very all singing, all dancing benefits package, including routine medical, dental, sick pay, death due to illness, death due to accident, and all of that. But the vast majority of them were not. They were just covering medical expenses, maybe a little bit of dental. Then two things
Wait,
happened with MLC.
we're just
So
talking about injury on board. If you get injured on board, or like what kind of a sickness would you get cover for?
You can have occupational illnesses. So for example, a back complaint can be considered an illness because it wasn't caused by an accident a lot of the time. It can be a syndrome, like degenerative back disc disease or something like that. That can be considered an occupational illness. Sometimes crew members argue that cardiac incidents and high blood pressure are occupational. But also, our plans, all of MHG's plans, cover accident and illness equally, regardless of whether they're occupational or not, in terms of medical expenses. So, if you, and the overlap is quite interesting because, for example, let's say a crew member dies in an accident on board, and then another crew member on the same boat dies of a brain hemorrhage the next day on board. In most cases back then, there would be no death due to illness cover. So one crew member would get 3 times salary or $100,000 or whatever, and the other crew member's family would get nothing. And it does feel like a little bit arbitrary and unfair. And it's a difficult situation for the owner and their representatives to be in. So the attitudes to those things has changed more over the years. So we have more interest in covering.
Is that because they're two separate, like just trying to get my head around it. So like if the one person died on board, their family got something, but if somebody then got injured, could be related, does it, if it's not a related incident, the other family don't get anything because you only cover one crew member at a time or being a
No, it's about the scope of cover. So
okay.
the vast majority of crew insurances will only cover accidental death. They won't also cover death by illness. There are some providers covering it, but it just leads to a bit of a disparity in coverage because both things can happen while on board. You want to be able to support the family of the crew member when it happens. So yeah, it's something that has that's definitely changed over the years.
That's got better. So obviously you can have an accident, die, but you if you have a heart attack and die, it was never really, it's not the
It
same
depends on
thing.
whether your crew. It depends on whether your crew insurance is covering death by illness, and it also depends on what it says in your contract. So your SEA should say whether your employer is going to pay out a lump sum compensation in the event that you become that you die as a result of illness and accident. If it's in the SEA, then if the crew insurance doesn't cover it, then the PNI should step in.
Right. So obviously, so the big change, 2013, the world's going to be a better place. The MCA have suggested that, is it what, so what became mandatory and then what, be, obviously sick pay was optional.
Sick pay wasn't optional, but sick pay was required, but it was they weren't required to insure it. So medical expenses, medical care, disability and death due to occupational hazard or accident, and sick pay were all required to be provided, but only permanent disablement and death and repatriation were required to be insured.
Right.
So obviously, it makes sense to a lot of owners to insure it all because if they're required to pay it anyway, they don't want to make a loss.
So it, like, so basically it's the difference between you insuring it and getting an insurance payment, or it comes out of your own pocket if it happened.
The other thing that MLC did, unfortunately, was one of the elements of it was that before MLC required 16 weeks of sick pay, a lot of owners were routinely insuring up to 104 weeks of sick pay. And then when MLC came along and made that minimum
Oh
standard of 16
no.
weeks, the standards kind of dropped a little bit.
They provided a minimum and they but they surely they would have known that the average was out there. And then they've created this lower, because obviously, as
I don't think it was an average. Don't forget that MLC applied to the entirety of shipping and not just yachting. So I think that in yachting, it was quite standard for sick pay to be 104 weeks if the owner actually purchased it. But I don't think that was a standard across shipping by any means.
Well, no, I suppose like working on a tanker is slightly more dangerous than working on a super yacht anyway. So it's weird to all be bunched into some of this stuff together. But would you say that 2013 was when you started to see a kind of more bespoke thought when it comes to the industry, like its separate needs and requirements?
Yeah, there was a scramble to make sure everyone was compliant and to make sure that the insurances they were purchasing were covering what they were promising in their contracts. And it also, after a couple of years, crew members started to become a lot more savvy about what the employers were supposed to be providing. So you'd get crew members saying, oh, well, but MLC says that I should have 16 weeks of sick pay. And I guess that drove more interest from crew members and put more pressure on employers to provide better crew insurance.
But also, you know, obviously becoming more aware of what you're supposed to be kind of entitled to, but also we would have heard horror stories of when boats have not done stuff. Because obviously it's always one of those things, you'd always hear those horror stories where, not that the insurance has not done it, but the boat's not done it. Do you know what I mean? That it turned out that the boat wasn't insured, or, do you know, all of these things. Those were those what are they called? We call, obviously, when it's a urban myth on land, a sea mystery.
Yeah. That's the thing, actually. I'm aware of at least one of those where a GoFundMe was set up for the crew member. It wasn't us that were providing the insurance, but a GoFundMe was set up for the crew member. The family were claiming that his medical expenses weren't being paid. But in fact, they were being paid. The insurance was in place. The crew insurer and the P&I and the owner were all doing, and the management were all doing what they should be doing. But there was, the story just got, it grew legs and got away from itself. So I think every large yacht has to have P&I. They have to have class, you know, depending on what they're doing. They've got class, they've got, you know, reputable flags behind them. They're going to have the insurance that they're required to have, unless it's a small private boat that's on a dodgy flag or something like that.
Yeah. So, but like all things, was it death is in the detail? So, like, within, you know, they'll have what they're supposed to. But is it... Are there optionals? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of the bare minimum, or do they go for the all singing, all dancing package?
I think the thing to remember from a crew perspective is that while your owner might be making some generous purchasing decisions about the crew insurance, it is his insurance or her insurance at the end of the day. Your job can disappear at a moment's notice, as everyone knows in yachting. You could become injured and your career could end at a moment's notice. So the crew, while it's lovely that your owner is providing really, really nice crew insurance, I think every crew member should be aware of, or they should have a plan for the eventuality of that not happening. But yeah, I think in my experience, the larger yachts, the very large yachts tend to have pretty nice crew insurance packages, and the smaller yachts, sub 40 metres, tend to have less generous insurance packages. And that's just, I guess that's down to the disposable income of the owner and the fact that they've got good professional management advising them on what they should have and not have.
Well, obviously, on a bigger boat, it's more management, isn't it? You know, if you're going to have 120 metre to get that thing to function, it is more like a cruise ship. So obviously, you know, in some respects, it'd be easier to get proper insurance and things like that. But like you said...
That's an angle that lots of people don't think about. It's not just about what it's covering, it's about how it's covering it. So not only is it covering your losses, it's taking care of the payments, it's taking care of the repatriation, it's taking care of the evacuation, it's doing all of these things if it's working well And not every crew insurance can work well 100% of the time. There's always going to be bumps in the road. But that is an element that should be considered.
So obviously 2013, from a female perspective, were there actually differences between male and female crew when it came to insurance? Did they actually recognize that we are slightly different, have slightly different conditions and such?
I would say broadly speaking, no. Some crew insurance packages, I mean, probably more crew insurance policies cover maternity now than they used to. And that might be to do with MLC because I think there are some interpretations of MLC that say that you should be covering the expenses of a pregnant crew member under the medical care provision. But then there's some argument over whether pregnancy is a medical condition.
Feels pretty
And
medical,
whether
in my
it's an
personal
illness or
experience.
not is arguable. So yeah, there's that. The only other difference that I can think of would be on an individual basis. If you're buying individual medical insurance coverage for yourself, unless you're in the EU or the UK where there was a law passed forbidding insurers from discriminating between males and females, you're going to pay a lot more in premium if you're a woman than you're a man.
Brilliant.
A lot more. That's on the
Well,
individual level, not on the group basis. It doesn't work like that for large groups.
the thing is, I was wanting to know, obviously as a crew member, because we do have slightly, slightly different needs and experiences, and considering, I'm not saying a male body is not as complicated, but we do, bleed every month. And do you know what I mean? There's more, the inner workings of a female is slightly more complicated than the average guy. I mean, that's before you even get onto hormones and all that kind of jazz. So I just wondered, in the eyes of insurance, whatever they cover is only the stuff. Well, most things cover, most stuff that guys get, we can get, but there are a few things that not. So if they don't recognize that there are any differences, then you can't get cover. Or that's not covered. Because it's like going into the realms of, if you had, oh, I don't know, had like an internal complication, like we talked about smear tests quite a lot, pregnancy, abortion, all of those kind of things. They are only things that happen to us. In the eyes of a crew member, would you say that they need to remember that the boat insurance probably won't cover stuff like that?
Not really. Well, so in terms of generally, the coverage is just for medical conditions which are diagnosed during the period of insurance, or if the policy covers pre-existing conditions, then just medical expenses arising while you're covered. So, and the that'll be subtracted from that will be whatever's excluded. And you don't generally see exclusions for specifically for female conditions or anything like that. What you will see is exclusions for elective abortions, which aren't to do with medical need. So the medical expenses policy is about covering things which are due to a medical diagnosis. And unless the abortion would be covered, generally speaking, if it's for the mother's health, but not otherwise.
To get it right in my head, so if a woman, for whatever reason, decides to terminate her pregnancy, goes back on board, gets complications, the boat will cover the complications but not the termination.
That would be a difficult situation, I think. That would be
Like getting
one
down to
where
the
there could
technical.
I can I've seen situations not exactly like this, but I've seen situations where, depending on the circumstances, the insurer ends up paying something that they, strictly speaking, wouldn't have wanted to pay under the terms and conditions of the policy. It all depends on the circumstances. So
It's a bit of a, like, this is a, the, I suppose this is a grey area for women, isn't it? Because I'm aware of a lady that her boat paid for her termination because they didn't want her to stop working because it was inconvenient. So they went ahead and kind of did all of that.
That is something that women should be aware of then, that, you know, they made the decision to pay for that termination, but if it had all gone horribly wrong later and millions of dollars had been incurred in complications expenses, would the owner then have wanted to keep paying those? Because the likelihood is the crew insurance wouldn't have wanted to pay it. It's a potential that the P&I might pick it up, depending on the liability and whether everything was done correctly or not. But yeah, that's something that needs careful consideration.
Well, it's also like they say, if you got pregnant but didn't realise you were pregnant, you just thought that you'd, you know, you end up being 3 months pregnant and not really realising, because it wasn't uncommon for you to miss periods, get into complications. Obviously, that's medical, technically. You need to go, you know, if something starts to happen to you whilst on board, then the boat will cover it. Even though you didn't know, like, the, you know, yeah, no, playing devil's advocate, you know, kind of thing.
Whether you know or not isn't relevant. What comes into play with medical, with crew insurance, is whether you're still within the maternity waiting period, and whether your policy covers maternity. And if it doesn't cover maternity, does it cover complications, even if it's not covering, like, the routine delivery? So it depends on from policy to policy. So the vast majority of policies would all have, like, a 10 or 12-month waiting period. So from the start of your insurance, you can't claim for any maternity-related expenses for the first 12 months or 10 months, which means that if you're pregnant when you start, you're not covered. I think there's one plan out there that doesn't have a waiting period, but the rest of them all would have one. If there's maternity covered and you're not within the waiting period, or if complications are covered even though the maternity is not, then you would be covered whether you knew you were pregnant or not.
You just can't be pregnant in the first 12 months of being on board, just to be safe.
Yeah.
You know, don't.
It's one of those lovely things about being a woman. One of that long laundry list.
It is, you know, one of the reasons for talking about such things is, obviously, you know, we've had other guests, and hormones becoming irregular on board due to stress, you know, these things can happen. You know, periods become erratic or stop altogether because you're so stressed out, bad diet, all of those things. So it's just interesting to kind of iron out what, you know, what happened. I mean, we've all heard the horror stories.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, so what, from your perspective, you think about, obviously, cases and claims that you know, what are women coming through and claiming?
I was just doing a bit of work on that before we came online. It's hard for me to be specific because we have a lot of data, and actually it isn't broken down by gender at the moment. So I had to do a very quick back of the fag packet kind of effort before we came online. But I'm scrolling through these claims and I'm seeing a lot of pelvic stuff. So fibroids, cysts, menstrual situations. I think we probably get about 8 or 10 pregnancies a year. You know, bowel discomfort, all of the stuff that every single woman knows someone who's got, seeing a lot of that. What I'm not really seeing, and again, this is very don't quote me kind of situation, I'm not seeing a lot of the stuff like that we see with the men. So shoulder injuries, knee problems, back problems. I don't know, back problems could, back and neck I think we do see with females, but you know, we get a lot of knee operations, shoulder operations, elbow operations with the men. I'm not seeing a whole lot of that on this list for women. So there is a big difference.
It's quite interesting. So, like, although, the cover doesn't really see male and female, but what they're claiming for is very clearly male and female injuries. But where the female issues are, what is most commonly coming up, it would be really, obviously, much if you could get some more data, it would be very exciting because we love a stat. The insurance is kind of a bit grey in it because, like I said, because like what you said, pregnancy or polycystic ovaries or some kind of complication that happens down there. Obviously, we've had Jane, Jem's mum, her boat covered her cancer diagnosis for as long as it could, which was great. But again, on the face of it, what we're told insurance cover does cover, but it's ending up covering a lot of stuff that it doesn't recognize either. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? You are covering a lot of, the female stuff, but it's not kind of highlighted that you do cover it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course. Well, in a way, it's a good thing because it's evidence that we're not discriminating. You've got a medical condition, you need treatment, you can get your treatment on the MHG policies that we sell, whether it's our own Lloyd's product or any of the ING or GA Blue policies that my Fort Lauderdale colleagues sell. The crew members can get their treatment whether the condition arises or their symptoms arise while they're on board or when they're at home. So that could be, I would actually be super interested to see the claims experience of a plan that doesn't cover home country expenses and see if they're covering as much of the female conditions that we're seeing here. Because I would imagine most women grin and bear it until leave comes round and then go to the doctor when they get home.
Well, because if you think about the nature of those kind of that's these conditions, you don't really want to talk about them either. But it's quite, like I said to you before, why I wanted to talk to you in more detail is that I don't think women understand that the boat insurance could. You don't have to wait. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, you
women
absolutely
are
don't. Yeah.
holding on to go home because they don't think it's an actual physical injury or it won't be covered. From what you just briefly, what you're looking at is the boat is covering for stuff like that. So you don't have to wait until your next rotation to go home to get these
If
things
your
looked at.
policy covers home country, yes. Lots of cheap policies don't cover home country because the owner hires European crew and he knows they all have health system or they just don't want to cover that stuff. Or they don't have the budget for the crew insurance which covers it. The crew insurance which covers home country will be easily twice as expensive as the one that doesn't. So that's a question to ask when you're joining a boat or when you're being told about crew insurance. Is it going to cover me in my home country? And can I get private treatment? Because all of the policies that we sell, we're covering you in your home country and you can seek treatment privately. You don't have to.
Well, in this country at the moment, going private, because you'll never get back to work if you had to wait. Like, do you know what I mean? The NHS is not in a good state. So you're going to delay getting fixed and getting back to work. And that's on, ultimately what insurance, that's why you have it, is to get your workforce back to work.
Of course, there's so many knock-on effects of crew members grinning and bearing it through pain. They don't manage to get back to work on time. It costs the boat more in replacement, recruitment and salary for a replacement crew member. It often means that the condition becomes more serious than it needed to, and therefore ends up costing more for the insurer or for whoever's paying the bill at the end of the day. could even cost a crew member their career if they don't get it seen to quickly enough. So all of those things are factors.
They are all factors. And that, like I said, again, going back to why we're doing this in the first place, education, you know, crew really, and from a female perspective, it's really important that you try and get your head around what your boat will and won't cover. I mean, it, you know, from what we've just briefly talked about now, just try, just ask and get the captain to at least attempt it. And I know that obviously a lot of these things are deeply personal and you might not want the captain to know, but you know, ultimately your health comes first and there's no point waiting around. If the boat can sort it out, and might even sort it out in the location that you're at. Don't get me wrong, one of the nicest hospitals I ever went to was Spain. It was lush. Like, I'm like, this is like a hotel. This is not like
the hospital. I bet I know which one that was, and it's bloody expensive, let me tell you.
I have to say, like, just to digress slightly, so I was having pain inside. It was probably my gallstone starting like a million years ago, but I could lay, because cabin mattresses are so uncomfortable. Like, when I'd lay sometimes, there'd be a pain in my side. So anyway, my captain was like, just go and have it, get it looked at. You know, we were in the yard, we weren't in any rush to go anywhere. Went to this doctor's. It was the fittest doctor I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, he was a German doctor. He was beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed, hench. Like, he worked out. He was really tall. And I'm just like, I got in my work stuff. I looked awful. I'm like, this is not the time for a full examination. I do not look prepared. And then it was a double whammy because his assistant was another man that was obviously touched by some kind of Grecian god, but dark hair, dark eyes, still like 6 foot. I'm like, what is this clinic? Where
it's like a selection box, Charisse.
What? He was like, we're going to do a full exam. I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then you go home, you go back to the UK, and it's like some poor grey-haired guy that's being driven mad by working too hard. It's just, you know, if one of the takeaways from listening to this is, and one of the reasons why we wanted to talk, is the insurance might, it's worth it. I just don't want women to just sit on it and go, oh, you know, I haven't had, you know, arguably like a period for 5 months, but I'll sort it out when I get back. You know, boats will pay for smear tests. I have known of people. It's not a massive amount of money to get a private smear test that the insurance company is going to get. But if, you know, you don't get it done and then that turns into cancer that comes on board, you know, it's a bigger deal.
I can't help feeling that part of the reason women don't go and get smear tests while they're on board is that they feel like it's a bigger deal than it actually is. I mean, everyone procrastinates getting their smear tests, to be honest. Nobody enjoys it. But yeah. It's not necessarily always the case that the crew insurance will cover it. Some crew insurance policies are only going to cover something that has a diagnosis, and they're not going to cover something that is preventive. But even if that's the case, it didn't cost you a lot to get it done. You can ask the captain to pay it, and he might do. Or you can just... I think you're probably getting paid enough to pay, yeah, a deal.
It's not as expensive, you know, as you think it's going to be.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to just say before I forget is that... I think, you know, you made a good point earlier that lots of these things, like the pelvic problems, the menstrual problems, women will not want to go to their captain or their head of department with that. And I don't think they necessarily have to in the first instance. What they can do first is check whether there is direct access to the insurance without going through an HOD or a captain. If the policy is named and you have an ID card that has your name and your policy number on it, the likelihood is that you don't have to go through anyone and you can just access the crew insurance directly. So
is
then
that,
you would have to have
that. Is that more common now than it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, MHG has always had named cover, and for a lot of years, all of our competitors did not. So it is becoming more common now. But again, it's more expensive to have named coverage because the awareness amongst the crew is higher. Therefore, the claims experience is higher. Therefore, you have to pay more money for the insurance. So it's all down to budget and also down to the appetite or the capacity of whoever's managing the boat, because there's a certain amount of admin involved in making sure that you're telling the insurance when people join and leave the program.
Well, I suppose on bigger, because bigger, like we said earlier, bigger boats are more like cruise ships than they are like yachts, so the admin would be done properly by purser or whatever. So you know, there's a strong chance, especially if you're on some of the larger vessels, that that could be a possibility, that you've got named cover, which means you've got, but then what's the point in having named cover if you don't understand what you could be ringing for? Which, you know, from the boat's perspective, they should be making sure that they highlight, you don't need to talk to us if you've got a problem, you know, talk to it. And that takes away the gatekeeper scenario, because obviously we talked about it slightly about, again, you know, holding on and waiting to go home to get sorted out. You know, you don't have to do that, but also, like you said, it can take a certain amount of courage, or, you know, just a bit of a nonchalant attitude, like, I'm just going to ask kind of thing, which, depending on what kind of person you are, that might be incredibly, you know, horrific to be able to talk.
I do feel like there needs to be a certain amount of openness from the captain and the management captain downwards about it's okay to tell us you're not okay. I feel like crews a lot of the time, well, not especially women, but definitely women feel like they have to be like superhuman to an extent. You know, there's guests on board, or they're picking up guests, so they've got a quick turnaround, or they're a person short or whatever. They feel like they have to disguise their problems until there's a convenient moment. And actually, sometimes there just isn't a convenient moment. There doesn't turn out to be a convenient moment. So I feel like there should be more attention paid to, if you're unwell, it's okay for you to say you need to seek help.
Yeah. I mean, it, from some respects as well, like, again, you know, in this day and age when everybody's talking about, you know, the mental health side of things, which we can talk about in a minute, you know, taking the pressure off the captain to deal with everything. You know, it's that micromanaging scenario. You know, if you've kind of taken it upon yourself, like, I'm not well, the insurance said that it will cover this, we go into this port, you know, can I get off? You've just taken a whole load of jobs out of his hands. You know, it's really just then going up to let him know, you know, that this is something that you need to do. And you don't have to do that much admin at this moment in time to sort that out for me.
I think that's much easier to do on the larger boats than on the smaller ones. I think where there's no purser involved and there's less management, professional management involved, the captains often feel like they have to be the gatekeeper of the crew insurance. Otherwise, you know, I think I said this in the last episode, they fear that crew members will take the mickey, getting this, that, and the next thing done. But in actual fact, there's a limit to how much crew members can abuse a medical insurance policy. You know, by and large they're not fraudulent. We very rarely come across any fraudulent claims. If they've got something wrong with them, they've got something wrong with them, and they need to they need to get it seen to. So you being in the way of that doesn't really have any effect.
One of the additional things that I wanted to talk about as well, because obviously mental health is, you know, been a buzzword for the last, probably say more heightened in the last couple of years, I'd say. You know, they're talking about it a lot more. How much has it changed, obviously, you know, so like 2013, are people taking up more mental health support than they ever have? Is there more on offer? Or is that's probably harder to get a crew member to come forward with than any other thing, I would say.
Yeah, MLC, I don't think MLC had any effect on that whatsoever. I think the main thing that drove that was COVID. It was a buzzword before COVID, but it's become more of one since then. And I wouldn't say that I mean, I'm the wrong one to ask, really, because all of our plans include inpatient and outpatient mental health coverage. So all we've done is expand it. You know, we've increased the limits. We've taken on our Lloyd's plan, our Latitude's product, we increased the sub limit. We took away the pre-existing conditions exclusion. We removed the deductible. Just all in the name of making it more accessible and less of a pain in the backside for crew members to access, in the hope that they would use it more. It doesn't seem like they are using it more, so back to the drawing board on that one.
I think we talked about it a little bit. So obviously with the, you know, the introduction of the Yacht Crew Helpline, and obviously, you know, people are calling about such things, but there is... it's not connecting to like being claimed for on board. Now that's obviously either through embarrassment, not wanting to confess, you know, not having maybe the right attitude towards mental health on board. It might take longer to be accepted, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a cultural shift. I mean, beyond saying it's okay to be okay, there needs to be an ethos on board every yacht where everyone's looking out for each other, everyone's getting their hours of work and rest, right? Everyone's, you know, eating a nutritious diet, you know, everyone's got adequate access to their family, you know, via internet. You know, there are so many. I think ISWAN refer to it as a three-legged stool of crew well-being or something like that. You've got to have like a number of different things all working in balance to have good mental health. And part of that for sure is maintenance. And like we just discussed with the crew members seeking help for things, for physical, I mean, mental illness is physical illness, but let's, for the sake of it, let's call it physical complaints. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do it until it's interfering in their lives. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So if you're busy and you haven't got time to get off the boat to get your smear test, are you going to get off the boat to go and seek some therapy? Or are you going to take that, you're going to ask the captain for that extra hour so that you can do your online therapy session? Or are you going to be open with your crew members? You know, it's, there's so many different jigsaw pieces to go together. And I think what is starting to make a difference is boats taking up maritime mental health awareness training, which is provided by lots of different organizations now, but notably ISWAN do it, and I think Seize the Mind are doing it. I think yeah. there's like an IAMI accredited mental health awareness course now, but for everyone on board to understand the signs of a struggling crew member, because if you think about it, if you're in a mental health crisis yourself, you're in the depths of that thing and you're not going to reach out. I feel like the vast majority of the time, you're not going to actually reach out yourself. You need someone to reach out to you and say, is it time that you got some assistance, or do you need
like,
some help?
It's like things like having a problem with drinking. You know, by the time the person who has the drink problem realizes they've got a drink problem, it's been a problem for everybody else for a very long time. You know,
and there's an element of allyship in that.
Even ever rep come to that realization, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely some allyship needed in many different ways in all of our lives, not just on yachts, but it's emphasised because of everyone's in such a pressure cooker environment when they're on board yachts. So allyship being, you know, not just laughing at your colleague who gets paralytic every time you go on a crew night out. Is paralytic a Scottish word, or is that understood?
Yes, I understood it, paralytic.
Okay, but so maybe blind drunk. If not just laughing at that colleague of yours that gets blind drunk every time, you know, not just laughing off the chief mate slapping the third stew on the bottom every time he walks past, you know, noticing when your bunk mate isn't sleeping, or you know, all of these things. I think everyone just needs to, everyone isn't perfect, and it's okay to be imperfect and to reach out.
But it's all like going to back to the main point, the insurance could assist. If you've got crew that can kind of look out for each other and help, you know, maybe a crew member realize like you're having a tough time, we can see that before it gets to the wrong point. Do you want to check and, you know, see if you can jump off? The boat will cover it and get yourself sorted. I think, you know, if we can ideally get to a point where those kind of conversations are being had. You know, I can see you're struggling. We all see that you're struggling. Why don't you just check out the boat insurance and see whether you can get off and have a chat with somebody? Because they, from a crew member's point of view, obviously you care about your crew members, but also we've all got to work together. So, like, you know, if the boat's willing to pay for it and the insurance is good enough and covers it, like, get your ass off and give yourself a good chance of getting sorted.
I think that happens in a psychologically safe environment, though. Like, if the crew member fails, there will be no negative repercussions to accepting that help and doing that thing. Then they will do it. But if they've never seen their superior being vulnerable, if they've never heard the captain talk about mental health challenges or times that they had to seek help. Do you know what I mean? If you're not in a situation where you feel like it would be a safe thing for you to do, you're not going to do it. So it's all about, yes, the insurance is there to be used and it will pay out if it's the type of insurance that includes that cover. But there has to be a culture shift on board the majority of yachts, I think. Because like I said in the last episodes, these benefits are not being used.
No, but they need to. You need to be aware that they are there. Mm-hmm. I think, and more importantly, I think like with the. Do you think the boats are good like with crisis stuff now? You know, like if there is a trauma on board, you know, a death on board, boats are getting quite not only obviously dealing with that situation, but psychologically trying to help the whole crew deal with these things. You know, is that kind of, because also like, you know, it's been raised recently, a few cases of, you know, potential rape on board, obviously again, traumatic experiences, not only for the victim, but for the whole crew to witness, you know. Does it have to be a physical thing for the boats to kind of react still at the moment before, you know, when it comes to, you know, violence, drug abuse, alcoholism, all of those other things that go on?
I think I want to say I'm probably not the best person to ask this, but I want to say that attitudes to this sort of thing have changed, because I want to say probably 8 or 10 years ago, there would have been an incident on board a boat and everyone would have been told, pull your socks up and get on with it. I can think of a few situations where something really terrible happened on board and it was brushed under the carpet and never thought of again. In the last 5 or 6 years, I can think of maybe a handful of times where there's been a death on board, or actually usually just death or a very scary experience like a fire or something like that, where the owner has arranged for counsellors to come on board and assess everyone, make sure they're okay, offer ongoing treatment and support. I would love to know if what's happening with the crew who are on the boats involved in these situations. I hope very much that the crew members are being supported and that everyone is being given the mental health support that they need. But I'm unaware. I'm in the dark on that.
Like follow up kind of scenario. So like what's going on? Because, you know, in a crisis situation, say there's a death on board. From my understanding, you know, I think yourselves and potentially Medair, they offer X amount of counselling sessions after that trauma. But obviously, you know, if you've got something that results in PTSD, that's going to stick with you for for life kind of scenario is not going to go away. But it would be nice to have more information about what happens to those individuals. And like I said, one of the things I always wanted to raise when it comes to insurance is where boat insurance stops and where personal responsibility to take it to that next level steps in. Because like I said, there is now products that can take it to the next level. So for instance, the boat covers you for PTSD during that incident, but you choose to leave, that could potentially be the end of that support because you've left the boat. But there are now, in the form of income protection, you can then carry on with that treatment, which, you know, is now available, which I wasn't aware that it was available before.
Yeah, that feeds back into what we were talking about earlier about crew members having a plan. It's a, you need an escape plan, really. And it, unfortunately, the way insurance works is that it has to be in place already before the thing happens. So, you know, for example, you become unfit for duty. The boat pays out 2 years of sick pay, which is very generous. Maybe even you become permanently disabled and you get a permanent disablement payout from the crew insurance. But that's it, really. Some policies would cut, they have a benefit period which continues after the end of your employment. But that won't be any longer than 2 years from the date of onset of the condition. So at that point, you're already disabled. You already have the medical condition. You can't really get it insured at that point. There are some policies which cover pre-existing conditions, but those insurers can choose whether to give you a policy or not. And if you have something that is obviously very expensive to cover, they're not going to cover you. So thinking about your own, I mean, it's expensive to purchase international major medical insurance for yourself and income protection for yourself. It's not always easily available depending on what country you're from and where you're living. But I think speaking to a good financial advisor at the outset of your career about what you, how to future-proof yourself is a good idea, because like I say, lots and lots of crew end up having not paid any social system contributions even, leaving the industry with a really serious condition, and they find that they're up that creek without a paddle. It needs to be thought about.
And it does need to be thought about. It's something that's not talked about enough, I don't think. Because there is limit, you know, like I've said to you before, I'm all for boat insurance. You know, what you do and what you offer is fab for what it is. But crew need to really understand its limitations. Like if you're a guy on board and you hurt your back, the boat will cover you for a bit, but it won't cover you forever. And, you know, you've got big old house. You know, you might have kids in private school. Do you know what I mean? Like this is an expensive lifestyle to maintain, and the boat insurance will only ever take you so far. Personal responsibility has to come in. And when it comes to females on board as well, you know, you might not have, you know, you've got a mortgage or whatever, but while you're recovering, you don't want to be thinking about the looming, you know, and a lot of, I am aware of some boat insurance that once you're repatriated, they stop paying, you know, like you said about home medical. So great, the boat covers you while you're away, all those medical expenses. When you land back home to, you know, maybe have a longer recovery period, the boat will stop paying, but you've still got bills to pay. How are you going to pay your bills whilst you recover? It's, you know, these things do exist now, but for UK tax residents, it exists. But we really want to kind of make sure that, because there's loads of technicalities. I love death is in the detail when it comes to insurance, because a lot of yachties will take out personal insurance thinking that it will cover. One of the best ones that I ever heard was they thought they had income protection for obviously when they're away, not seeing in the small print that if they were out of the country, which they have to be out of the country to be, you know, to get their tax exemption, that voids their insurance because they're not a tax resident in the UK. So do you know, they are a tax resident, but they're using a loophole. Like The detail is very, very important.
Well, good advice is important. You know, I know that there are people operating in who target yacht crew who aren't necessarily 100% up on all of the details that they need to be up on. I think finding a broker,
way of saying not qualified?
I think it's such that a difficult a thing, though.
Very politically correct way of saying they haven't got any qualification.
It's so difficult, though. I think the thing that crew need to remember is that the laws and rules are different in every single country.
Yep.
They need to find a qualified broker or financial advisor in their own domicile who understands yacht crew and or understand the expatriates and advise them accordingly. You know, there's lots of international major medical to come back to my specialism. There's lots of international major medical plans for expatriates, but they don't all work for yacht crew.
No.
So it's important to think about what you're doing and don't just buy. I mean, I love Martin Lewis, the money saving expert in the UK, yeah. But I hate the fact that he's always telling you to buy the cheapest thing you can get. The important thing is making sure it's covering you for everything that you need.
Well, the thing is, it's, you know, you've got to recognise what you're doing is not a normal 9-to-5 job. So therefore, you have, you know, doing the right thing financially and for your well-being is slightly more complex. And you can't get complacent. It's a bit like, you know, your insurance needs to be in place before something happens. So you've got to do it when things are good. It's a bit like joining Nautilus. You need to join Nautilus when you've got the great job on a great boat and everything is fine. Because when you leave that boat or the boat changes hands and everything just turns to absolute crap and you're hung out to dry, Nautilus can't retrospectively look after you. That's not how it works.
And if you've gone for 20 years without paying any social system contributions, you might find it's actually a lot harder to get back into your social system than you thought. You definitely will find it's harder if you're trying to get back in Australia, Germany. Those are two that I know penalise people who haven't been paying the social system contributions that they should have been, from experience, because crew members come to us asking us for help in these situations. The other thing I wanted to quickly point out as well is that green crew members who are seeking their first jobs in Antibes or Palma or whatever, a lot of them assume that their reciprocal health coverage between their country of residence and the country that they're seeking work in will cover them for everything that they need. And it just won't. If you become... So there's reciprocal health agreements between the UK and the EU, for example. That will not repatriate you if you become ill. So you'll get stuck in that country because you can't pay for an air ambulance to get you home. So there's so many things that crew members need to think about. They're just blithely like swanning around, not realising what can go on.
Well, you're young. That's what happens when you're young. You know, when you're a bit older like us and bits are falling off and stop working, you know, you're like, oh, need to think about that, don't you? So, you know, it's... But this is one of the reasons why we wanted to get you back on, because we're just going to have to keep having the same conversation and telling these stories over and over again. I think we should do an update because I know that there's lots of new things on the horizon, especially with mental health. So we'll have you on again to have a chat about how things are going, how things are changing, because... You know, just through having fantastic conversations with somebody like yourself, you can see, you know, just by requesting you to have a look in your files and see what women are, you know, there is a difference. You know, I know in the eyes of insurance, you're not really seeing it as a difference. But again, when it comes to accepting a job and one's got your insurance and that individual knows that you generally cover, you know, a lot of stuff that goes on with a female body over another boat that they don't say that they cover these things, that could be a more attractive option.
Just to be clear, it's not that we're covering it and the other policies aren't covering it. It's more about access and crew members feeling comfortable seeking treatment for those conditions. And I think if female crew members get into more positions of power, and in positions where they have purchasing power, there might be more attention paid to those aspects of the purchase.
Well, you know, changes, you know, when it comes to maternity, it becomes more prevalent. You've already said that it's increased recently as well. So, like, just, you know, keep pushing, keep asking the questions, and things start to change anyway. But thank you very much for your time. I've really appreciated your conversation, nerding out yet again.
Massive pleasure.
And like I said, we will have you back on to just, you know, perhaps go over specific topics that arrive, you know, examples of what's going on. There's a lot of stuff going on in the industry at the moment, and that's before we've even started the season. So God knows, hopefully everybody's safe and sound this season, but you know, yachting is yachting at the end of the day. There'll be some drama somewhere. So we can have you back to talk about more specific stuff. Thank you for coming on.
Really, thank you, Cherise.
So listener, if you've enjoyed this episode, obviously we do have another episode with Joanna. We will be putting up information and links to MHG so you can understand who they are. So if you are going for a job and they're like, the boat says they've got that insurance, you've obviously a little bit older, a little bit wiser right now after listening to this episode. So you know some conversation.
I'm definitely older.
Oh yeah. So you definitely be a bit more aware of the things you need to look out for. Obviously named insurance, if you got the, you know, the golden goose and got named insurance. Don't wait around to get yourself seen if you're not quite well. But we will continue to keep doing these educational episodes. I want you all to be safe and having a fabulous time and drinking rosé in the sun, because that's what you're supposed to be doing. We've got loads more fabulous episodes to come, but thank you very much for joining us this episode. Until next time, bye-bye.